माधवा कुंज बिहारी गोपी जाना वल्लभा गिरिवर धारी जय गोपी जाना वल्लभा गिरिवर धारी यशोदानन्दना ब्रज जनरञ्जना यशोदानन्दना ब्रज जनरञ्जना यशोदानन्दना ब्रज जनरञ्जना यमुना तीरवनचारी यमुना तीरवनचारी जयो राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी गोपी जना वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी यशोदानन्दना ब्रज जनरञ्जना यशोदानन्दना ब्रज जनरञ्जना यशोदानन्दना ब्रज जनरञ्जना यशोदानन्दना ब्रज जनरञ्जना यमुना तीरवनचारी यमुना तीरवनचारी जयो राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 राम हरे राम 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 हरे 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 कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 राम Rama Rama Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jaya Prabhupada, 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 Jaya Prabhupada. Prabhupada, 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 Jaya, Jaya, Prabhupada. Hariram Sankirtan Ki Jai Om Vishnupad Paramhansa Parivrajak Acharya Stotra Shadish Shrimad Abhay Charnavindam Bhakti Vedanta Swami Shri Prabhupada Maharaj Ki Jai. Jai Om Vishnupad Paramhansa Parivrajak Acharya Stotra Shadish Shrimad Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Goswami Maharaj Shri Prabhupada Ki Jai. Shri Rup Sanatana Bhatta Raghunath Shri Jeeva Gopal Bhatta Das Raghunath Shad Goswami Prabhugan Ki Jai. Namacharya Shri Haridas Thakur Ki Jai. प्रेम से कहो श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवास आदि गौर भक्त वृंद की जाए. श्री श्री राधा कृष्ण गोप गोपीनाथ श्याम कुंड राधा कुंड गिरि गोवर्धन की जाए. श्री वृंदावन धाम की जाए. श्री नवदीप मायापुर धाम की जाए. पुरुषोत्तम क्षेत्र श्री जगन्नाथपुरी धाम की जय. गंगा मई की जय. यमुना मई की जय. भक्ति देवी की जय. तुलसी महारानी की जय. समवेत भक्त वृंद की जय. गौर प्रेमानंदी. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories, all glories, all glories to Sri Guru and Sri Gauranga. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Narayanam Namaskrityam Naram Chaiva Narottamam Devim Sarasvatim Vyasam Tato Jaya Mudhirayet. నష్టప్రాయేషు అభద్రేషు నిత్యం భాగవత సేవయా. భగవతి ఉత్తమ శ్లోకే భక్తిర్భవతి నైష్టికీ కృష్ణాయ వాసుదేవాయ దేవకీ నందనాయ చ నందగోపకుమారాయ గోవిందాయ నమో నమః. గోవిందాయ నమో నమః. హరే కృష్ణ. రీడింగ్ ఫ్రమ్ శ్రీమద్ భాగవతం క్యాంటో 12 చాప్టర్ 3 ఎంటైటిల్డ్ ద భూమి గీత్ వర్స్ నంబర్ 27. ప్రభవంతి యదా సత్వే మన్నో బుద్ధి ఇంద్రియాణి చ తదా కృత యుగం విద్యా జ్ఞాని తపసి యద్ రుచిః. ప్రభవంతి యదా సత్వే మనో బుద్ధి ఇంద్రియాణి చ తదా కృత యుగం విద్యా జ్ఞాని తప్సి యద్ రుచి. ప్రభావంతి యదా సత్వే మనో బుద్ధి ఇంద్రియాణి చ తదా కృత యుగం విద్యా జ్ఞాని తప్సి యద్ రుచిః. ప్రభవంతి యదా సత్వే మనో బుద్ధి ఇంద్రియాణి చ తదా కృత యుగం విద్యా జ్ఞానే తప్సి యద్ రుచి. ప్రభావంతి యదా సత్వే మనో బుద్ధి ఇంద్రియాణి చ తదా కృత యుగం విద్యా జ్ఞానే తప్సి యద్ రుచి. ప్రభవంతి యదా సత్వే మనో బుద్ధి ఇంద్రియాణి చ తదా కృత యుగం విద్యా జ్ఞానే తప్సి యద్ రుచిః. ప్రభవంతి దే ఆర్ ప్రీడామినెంట్లీ మేనిఫెస్ట్ యదా వెన్ సత్వే ఇన్ ద మోడ్ ఆఫ్ గుడ్నెస్ మనః ద మైండ్ బుద్ధి ఇంటెలిజెన్స్ ఇంద్రియాణి సెన్సెస్ చ హ్యాండ్ తదా దెన్ కృత యుగం ద ఏజ్ ఆఫ్ కృత విద్యా should be understood. Jnane, in knowledge. Tapsi, and austerity. Yat, when. Ruchi, pleasure. Translation and purport by the disciples of this divine grace, Shri A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. When the mind, intelligence and senses are solidly fixed in the mode of goodness, that time should be understood as Satyayuga. The age of truth. People then take pleasure in knowledge and austerity. Purport. The word krita means performed or executed. Thus in the age of truth, all religious duties are duly performed and people take great pleasure in spiritual knowledge and austerity. Even in the Kali Yuga, those who are situated in the mode of goodness take pleasure in the cultivation of spiritual knowledge and the regulated performance of austerity. This sublime state of existence is possible for one who has conquered six desire. Om Ajnanatimirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya चक्षुरुन्मिलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः श्रीचैतन्यमनोभीष्टं स्थापितं येन भूतले स्वयं कदा उपकदामयं ददाति स्वपदान्तिकं नम ओं विष्णुपदाय कृष्णप्रेष्ठाय भूतले श्रीमते भक्तिवेदान्त स्वामिनिति नामिने नमस्ते सरस्वते देवे गौरवाणी प्रचारिणे निर्विशेषशून्यवादी पाश्चात्यदेशतारिणे नमो महावदन्याय कृष्णप्रेमप्रदायते कृष्णाय कृष्णचैतन्य नामिने गौरतुषे नमः हे कृष्णा करुणा सिंधु दीनबंधु जगत्पते गोपेश गोपिका कांत राधा कांत नमोस्तुते तप्त कांचन गौरांगी राधे वृंदावनेश्वरी ऋषभानुसुते देवी प्रणमामि हरि प्रिये वाञ्छाकल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपासिन्धुभयैवच पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिवास आदि गौर भक्त वृंद हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे When the mind, intelligence and senses are solidly fixed in the mode of goodness, that time should be understood as Satya Yuga, the age of truth. People then take pleasure in knowledge and austerity. Hare Krishna. Seeking the blessings of all devotees so that we can discuss on this Amal Puran Srimad Bhagavatam. So, here we have something very interesting happening. The chapter is entitled Bhumi Geet. But if you see, there are more than, I think, about 50 verses or so. And it's only the first 13 verses that are actually spoken by Bhumi Devi. Shukdev Goswami is using the expression of Bhumi Devi to convey many things to Parikshit Maharaj himself and to the general mass. That is indicated to the populace who were sitting there and who are going to come in the future. So initially, Bhumi Devi, out of her motherly compassion, expresses disgust over the activities of the kings who are trying to control her, who are trying to lord over her, in the sense trying to control material nature. And she actually, her heart is crying, seeing that these leaders, bound by great expectations, have taken faith in the dead lump of matter, that is their own body. And bound by great expectations, they even do not realize that death is waiting nearby. And with such a mentality, they become helpless at the time of death, just as they are helpless at the time of birth. And their hearts are just bound to possess political power. In one sense, this critic of Bhumi Devi is used by Shukdev Maharaj to appreciate Parikshit Maharaj indirectly by saying that they become helpless when they are departing from this world. Shukdev Goswami is trying to indirectly indicate to Parikshit Maharaj, Parikshit Maharaj, you are not like them. You have made a deliberate, determined choice that how you would like to pass away. Like them, you are not unawares of the impending death. being well aware that this is the desire of the Lord, you have taken this step of coming here on the bank of Ganges and taking final shelter at the feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Unlike them, you have already given up your kingdom and have shown true renunciation. So in this way, by drawing a critic at the kings who have previously unjustly tried to rule over her, she is trying to glorify the qualities of Parikshit Maharaj, who has made this deliberate attempt to take shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord. In this way, we can see that Parikshit Maharaj is being glorified by Bhumi Devi. And later on, Shukdev Goswami also starts giving the solution for what Bhumi Devi is trying to indicate here, that these kings are just like puppets in the hands of the modes of material nature. And what the solution is, we'll be seeing later. But here, Parikshit Maharaj is asking his final questions. Very surprising. You know, usually when a person is dying, you want to hear from him. Now, what was your experience of life? What have you learned? Please share. And the dead man is eager to do that, like a final parting gift. But here, Parikshit Maharaj, though he is the person who is going to depart, is asking questions. But this asking of questions is also because of his inherent compassion. So we can see that the underlying theme here is nothing but compassion. The compassion of Bhumi Devi as mother. Here, the question is going to be asked by Parikshit Maharaj is due to his inherent compassion, because he has achieved his final destination in his life. This is what he is trying to indicate. Only a person who knows that he has finally achieved victory can pose such questions. Otherwise, a person is restless at the time of death. You know, and he's always looking, where is my son, where is my wife, you know, what about my wealth, and he's trying to give final instructions, you know, what you're supposed to do about that. And he becomes so fearful. But here Parikshit Maharaj is so composed. The person has to really be composed to ask such questions, such deliberate and intelligent questions. And that is only possible because he can see that he has conquered death. And indirectly, he is glorifying Shukdev Goswami. I have achieved this success because of you. So can you finally summarize all what you have said for the benefit of all? Especially for the benefit of the people of Kali, who are Mansumanda Mateor, Manda Bhagya Upadita. So this is like a summary of the whole thing after the Srimad Bhagavatam has been spoken. That is what the final conversation is going to happen. And we can see, ISKCON is celebrating Sharanam week this week, especially to highlight the studying of Srila Prabhupada's books. And we can see this same type of compassion in Srila Prabhupada's preaching. You know, he received this instruction that please translate these books in English at the banks of Radhakund. And Radhakund is nothing but the manifestation of the liquid form of Srimati Radharani, who herself is supposed to be the abode of compassion. Karuna Karumai, Karuna Mai, Karuna Bharite. So, Radhanath Swami Maharaj in one of his lectures was telling, I think this was in one of the Vrindavan Yatras, right at the banks of Radhakund, that this is the instruction that he received here, and he passed this droplets of compassion manifested in Radhakund in the form of his books, which have been distributed all over. In fact, once Harishari Prabhu, he came to know from the usual, you know, you have grapevine gossip little here, and transcendental gossip among devotees, that Srila Prabhupada had actually darshan of Rupa Goswami. And so he wanted to ask this to Prabhupada, you know, what was it like? And because he was a personal servant, he got many opportunities to do that. And once when he was with Prabhupada, he thought the time is right, and so he went and asked Srila Prabhupada. Now, Prabhupada, I've heard that you had darshan of Srila Rupa Goswami. And Prabhupada said, yeah, it's common knowledge, the whole world knows about it. So what? So in a sense, he dismissed his question, you know. Like, everybody knows, it's nothing great. In one sense, he was just being humble by answering in this way. And Harishwari Prabhu was a bit disappointed. You know, he wanted the really the intimate details of what actually transpired. And when Prabhupada just put it like this, he said, doesn't matter, you know, but I'll keep trying. And maybe after some months, he tried again. You know, Prabhupada, I heard that you had darshan of Srila Rupa Goswami. And this time, Prabhupada, you said, yeah, not required. You know, you don't need to know. It's not important for you. And Harishwari was like, again, disappointed. Later on, Prabhupada passed, you know, he winded up his manifest pastimes on this earth. And Harishwari Prabhu got to meet the son of Gaurachand Swami. I think his name was Gopalchand Goswami. And, you know, he asked to him, do you know about this, that Prabhupada actually had darshan of Rupa Goswami? He said, yeah, I know that. Because he was a small kid that time when Prabhupada was living in Radha Ramadhar temple. And he described the whole thing in quite detail. And he said, yes, you know, I was a small boy at that time and would play around. And Prabhupada once caught me stealing money from the hundi. And Prabhupada was very upset with that. And he really shredded me for doing that. He said, you do not know the reaction of that. This is Krishna's money. You cannot do that. And then Prabhupada, in his very gentlemanly way, said, okay, any case, what do you plan to do with this money? Why did you steal this money? He said, Prabhupada, I love sweets. You know, with this money, I'm going to go to the Lohi Bazaar and have some sweets. So Prabhupada, like a compassionate father, he said, oh, you love sweets? So what if I cook sweets for you? Then you will not steal? He said, yes, Prabhupada, why not? I would love to have sweets. He said, okay, what do you like in sweets? And he said, you know, nicely cooked pedas, which have really been, you know, nicely, the milk has been condensed. And Prabhupada said, oh, I'll do it for you. Because Prabhupada was actually always keeping some prasad for him to distribute to the guest who came. So in any case, he was making something. So said, I'll make something extra for the kid. And in this way, Prabhupada would actually, you know, he started keeping some prasad for him. And the boy actually stopped stealing. So his mother would also give something for Prabhupada in the evening, you know, whatever she would cook at house, and she would say, go and ask Prabhupada if she wants something. And the child would come and ask, and Prabhupada would sometimes take and sometimes not take. Once like this in the evening, he came and said, Prabhupada, would you like something? And Prabhupada said, no, I'm not feeling good today. You know, I have a lot of mucus. And the best thing if you have mucus is fast yourself. So I'll fast today. So he fasted for the night. And at night, this child got up. And he saw that his parents are looking at the room of Srila Prabhupada and conversing among each other. And so he was like, what are they talking, you know, looking at the room? And so he looked at the room, and there he could see as there's some bright light coming from inside, and Prabhupada is talking to someone. Now, if you have seen the Vrindavan temples, they're very small, like gheras, you know, and they have that huge shutters in front of the doors so that no one comes at night. They close it down. So it was very unlikely that someone has come at night and is, you know, like in an unearthly hour and is meeting with Prabhupada, and it's Prabhupada is talking with him. So in any case, the husband and wife decided, you know, if we just go to sleep. But the child remembered this in the morning, and he went rushing to Prabhupada and said, Prabhupada, someone came to meet you at night. Who was it? And Prabhupada, in a very nonchalant manner, said, yeah, Rupa Goswami had come. Oh, really? And the child, because he was a child, you know, oh, really, he came, huh? So what did he say to you? Well, he said to me that, you know, just publish this book in English and go to the West and we'll take care of the rest. Don't worry about it. Just do it. Now this, what the child told was this, but I do not know from where I've heard, if someone remembers can tell me, but actually it seems that Prabhupada told that, you know, till then he was planning to go to London, because the instruction was from Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was that go to the West. And for Indians during that time, because they had been ruled by the British, West actually meant London. And this is what some of their disciples had done before. But it was in this conversation that he was actually inspired by Rupa Goswami that you should go to New York. And that is when he started making deliberate attempts to go to the United States, you know, trying to get a visa and all that stuff. So any case, I just took this story in the sense to make us realize the import of what Prabhupada has given us. It's not with the instruction of his guru, but the blessings of all the predecessor acharyas that are coming along with him. Of course, this we know theoretically, but we can also appreciate this by this incident that took between Srila Prabhupada and Srila Prabhupada Goswami. And appreciate the deep imports of his purports. Not only that he spent his night translating, meditating on what he is supposed to do, but he was being very sure of each word that he was trying to use. In fact, Gaur Govind Maharaj, he was doing this translation into the Orient language. And when he was making this word-to-word translations, he thought, it's good that if I show this to a Sanskrit scholar, a real renowned Sanskrit scholar, so that people don't find fault with what Prabhupada has done. And when he went and showed to the Sanskrit scholar, after a few days he came back and he gave the whole set back. He said, this is not a work of a normal person. It is impossible what he has done. The words he has chosen are so impeccable. No normal person can do this. And he himself was a scholar. So when Gaur Govind Maharaj heard that, he was really inspired and really elated to get this, not that he really wanted, but he knew now no one can criticize on any count of what Prabhupada has done. He had the certification from this very renowned scholar in Bhubaneswar at that time. So Prabhupada was very meticulous, very particular, and he repeated this point quite often. And Harikesh Prabhu and Rameshwar Prabhu both recall that Prabhupada actually made the statements that I have been very deliberate in choosing each word, being very consciously making the translations and the purports, because I know that these books are going to be law books for the next 10,000 years. He made this statement at least on a couple of occasions. So he knew what he was doing. Yeah. And so yes, he did refer the Acharya's commentary, and he cross-referred so many books when he was translating. He was being very conscious of what he was doing. He did that endeavor, plus with that endeavor he had the blessings for all the Acharyas. But this is all the manifestation of his compassion. So here, the point is being made that these kings are being controlled by the modes. And therefore, Pashyan Apina Pashyati. So they cannot even see impending death. So it's not that they're not experienced. Everybody experiences, His relatives are passing, his mother, his father, his neighbors. They have been seeing it. So it's not that the experience is lacking. It is there. But still they cannot see. Why? Because they are just dancing puppets in the hands of modes of nature. Once Harishwari Prabhu was outside Prabhupada's room and just massaging him. And Prabhupada saw that, like these two sparrows, a couple was trying to build a nest. And Prabhupada said, Harishwari, please, just before the nest is done, please dismantle the whole thing, because they come and chirp in the night and it disturbs my translation. So Harishwari Prabhu just immediately, as soon as the sparrows went, he just made sure the nest is not there. And so when one of the sparrows came back, he was disturbed that the nest is not there. And he started building the nest again. And then Harishwari Prabhu saw that, and when the sparrow was away, he took a bunch of paper and put inside that hole where he was trying to make the nest. So when he came back, the sparrow came back and he said, "Oh, my place is gone." And so he tried to remove the paper, with his beak, his claws, but he failed. So he went back, got his partner, and both of them started to try that, and they were successful. Sangme Shakti. So both of them tried and they were successful, and they again started building the nest. And so when both of them were away, Harishwari Prabhu this time made sure, he really crumped the paper hard and pushed it really hard inside. And when they came back, they tried again this time and they couldn't. And they tried and said it's not working, so they just went away. And then Prabhupada was all this time looking at this, and then he gave his purport to this. He says, see, they do not know that someone superior is standing next to them. They are just unaware. They can see, yet they cannot see that it is you who are actually thwarting away all their attempts. Similarly, a man who is born by these modes of nature cannot see that all his attempts being made, impelled by these modes, are actually being baffled by Maya who is standing nearby. Yeah. So this is the case of the kings here. And we try to understand what is actually going on. It's something very interesting, and we can appreciate this aspect of death. And we'll take some verses from the Bhagavatam, especially the instructions of Kapil Muni to Mother Devahuti, who very fantastically defines, you know, this concept of death. Everything in the Vedic scriptures is so clearly delineated, so clearly defined, no ambiguity at all. Yeah, you'll not see this anywhere else, none of the scriptures, not to demean them in any way, but just to make the point that how the Vedic scriptures are so precise. And when you get Prabhupada's purports with them, it just comes out so amazingly. So, of course, we have Jatasya Dhruvam Mrityu Dhruvam Janma Mrityasya. And Bhagavad Gita has been clearly stated that for any person who is born, death is certain, and for anyone who dies, birth is inevitable. But even this simple point is not appreciated, you know, by people today. That was one reason that Prabhupada was against the scientists, so-called scientists. What he implied was definitely the epistemology of gaining, the way they gain knowledge. But what he also was implying was the whole purpose of material science was nothing but to propagate material sense gratification, thus defeating the purpose of human life. So it was on this count also that he was against the material scientist. So here Prabhupada is actually, these are the shlokas from I think the third chapter, 31, 43 to 48. And we'll just take some where he's making this point. In this way, the living entity gets a suitable body with a material mind and senses according to his fruitive activities. When the reaction of his particular activity comes to an end, that end is called death. And when a particular type of reaction begins, that beginning is called birth. In just one line, Prabhupada's, you know, this light like highlights the whole thing. Such contemporary example, but just drives home the point. It is a long film spool of actions and reactions. And one lifespan is just a flash in such a reactionary show. Right? Amazing. So he's comparing the whole cinema scope, you know, the whole film, the whole cinema that is going to the different birth, the whole birth and death chain of a living entity who's trapped in the modes of material nature. And why is he trapped? He's trapped because of the action and reaction. So the spool is like a never-ending film, yeah, never-ending spool. So like Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, anadi karma phale. It has no beginning and no ending. So this spool just goes on rotating. And when you can see the picture on the spool, when there's a flash of light, and this flash of lightning is just one lifespan of his. Yeah. Such an amazing example that he gives, just to highlight what is this cycle of birth and death. And then the Bhagavatam says, just to highlight this, says, when the eyes lose their power to see color or form, due to morbid affliction of the optic nerve, the sense of sight becomes deadened. The living entity who is the seer of both the eyes and the sight loses his power of vision. In the same way, when the physical body, the place where perception of objects occur, is rendered incapable of perceiving, that is known as death. When one begins to view the physical body as one's very self, that is called birth. And in one line, amazing how proper. When one's instrument of action is broken and cannot function, that is called death. Yeah, the concept of Kshetra and Kshetrajna. When the Kshetrajna loses his Kshetra, it is nothing but death. So further, actually Shukdev Goswami says, he says, but how do the general people actually view death? Indirectly he's saying, by saying, Kapil Muni is making this point by saying, please do not view death as follows, because this is how the general mass of people view death. How? They view death with horror. They view death defining the body as soul. And seeing death, they exaggerate in enjoying the bodily necessities of life. So in these three ways, he's defining how the general masses of people actually perceive death. So actually it is not death that is the problem. Yeah. What is the exact problem? Is the attachment to asat, to that which is not. That is the problem. Otherwise for devotees, that is a sign of victory. Right? That is what Dhruva Maharaj did. He stepped over death. But when death is a problem, it is not death per se that is the problem, but attachment to that which is asat. And so we can see and understand these aspects of viewing death with horror and defining the body as soul and exaggerating and enjoying the bodily necessities of life. We'll just dwell over this for some time. Now, very interesting, you know, because this is what Bhumi Devi is also saying here, that they're attached to this lump of matter. Right? It is attachment. Otherwise, there's matter all over. Right? There's matter in this wall, there's matter in the pillar, there's matter in the shelf, there's matter in this asana. Of course, for us, it is all connected to Krishna, so it becomes transcendental. But any case, if you see a building, there's matter. So if a pillar actually starts crumbling, you don't shout, "Hey, the pillar is crumbling, do something about it, call the ambulance, call the doctor." No. But the same matter, when it starts crumbling in the form of a body, you get so horrified. You get so panicky. This is matter and that is matter. So then why do you panic when this matter starts crumbling? It is because of this attachment to the matter. You don't have that attachment to the building. You don't have that attachment to the pillar. So, well, fine, it's crumbling and we'll take care of it. But that is not how you respond when this body starts crumbling. Right? You're in a high alert. You have to do something about it. Save it. So it is this attachment, this misidentification to the body. And so, he makes this point. So many of this, they view death with horror. And this point is very nicely highlighted in the dialogue between Vidur and Dhritarashtra, I think. It's in the 13th chapter. And he says, O king, he says, Ya manyase dhruvam lokam adhruvam vana chobhayam sarvatanahi sochyaste snehat anyatra mohojat. O king, in all circumstances, whether you consider the soul to be an eternal principle or the material body to be perishable, or everything to exist in the impersonal absolute truth, or everything to be an inexplicable combination of matter and spirit, feelings of separation are due only to illusory affection and nothing more. So the whole point that Vidura is trying to make is, don't lament, don't be horrified, don't be disturbed, don't be anxious. Because in either case, either of the philosophy you follow, you think, well, the soul is eternal and the body is temporary, then there is nothing to lament. Because the body is temporary. Why you lament? Just like you change your clothes, right? Any case, even if you don't accept this philosophy, and you think that it's a combination of matter and consciousness, just like the Sankhya, the atheist Sankhya philosophy thing, then also you have nothing to lament. Even if you think that, well, it is all Brahman, then also you have nothing to lament, because finally, the crumbling of body is nothing but destruction of illusion. So why you have to lament? Finally, everything is illusion. So you don't lament either way. Such a simple point. But for a person who's attached to his body, it just does not go. It just does not drive in. Right? That's why the statement, Pashyan napi pashyati. He can see, he can experience, but that experience does not sink into his heart. Right? He's bewildered at the time of death. He does just not know what to do. And that's why people, being horrified by this aspect, try to give the characteristics of the soul on the body itself. And trying to say, well, the body is not perishable. Till now we have been dying, but from now on, with the help of scientific advancement, we will not. You know, in fact, some years before, I think maybe like 15 years before or something, an MIT professor dared to make this statement actually. We are just few years away from conquering death. This is the last generation that will die. No more death after it. I mean, amazing what people can do. In fact, you know, there is a group of people called life extensionists. They try to extend life. Two, mainly, out of this. One, who are like rationalists, more rational, they are more like the gerontologists. The gerontologists are people who try to not directly conquer death, but try to conquer the afflictions or the disease caused due to old age. So when we are saying jara actually literally may be translated at old age, but specifically, and Prabhupada writes and highlights this at many places is the afflictions caused because of old age, not just old age, right? So the gerontologists are trying to conquer these afflictions, and they try amazing things. If you just go by, you know, what people are actually trying to conquer, they're thinking this body itself is the final thing. You know, people are taking like 80 to 90 pills a day as supplements. You know, lying on electromagnetic beds, lying in cryogenic capsules, and you know, just doing all that is possible, general wellness in whatever way, just to make sure that even if all these things do not help us to win over death, but maybe we can live more 10 or 15 years. And in this way, step by step, you know, take some more years. And maybe in those years, someone in the scientific community will come up with a magical remedy. Maybe not, you know, like finally conquering death, but maybe which can extend for another 70 or 80 years. So like this, step by step, we will conquer death. This is the last generation. Amazing. Amazing, the conviction. And this is what Prabhupada was trying to, you know, when he was criticizing scientists, this is what exactly he was criticizing, you know. Because finally their purpose, as the purport is saying there, you know, they are solidly fixed. They are solidly fixed in their purpose of conquering death in the right way. But the scientists are misidentifying the soul and the body, giving the characteristics of the soul, attributing it to the body, and trying to make that eternal. Yeah. And so many things actually, I don't want to dwell, because some things are so crazy, it's not even worth speaking from the Vyasa. But one of the, you know, like the longest living ladies, called Jan Kalma, like 122 years she lived. And when she, you know, left, people were trying to analyze, you know, how her body lifestyle, how her living lifestyle was, what she was doing and what we can take from her. If possible, we can have a blood sample. And still, they wanted to make a whole controversy of it and were denying, no, probably she was just cheating us, all of us, you know. She didn't live that long. Because the next after her was, I think, maybe something like 119 years or so. 3 years gap, that's a lot. I mean, amazing through the details that people can go to, you know, in so-called research in the scientific world to understand how one can extend life. And the third is exaggeration in enjoying the bodily necessities of life. And we have the famous slope of Charvak Muni. Rinam kritva gritam pipet yavat jivet sukam jivet. Yeah. So whatever it is, take. This is final. It's final. Why? Because punar agmano bhavet, kuthap punar agmano bhavet. Where are you going to come back? This is what all it is. So enjoy as much as you can. You know, and Ramakrishna was giving an example. He said when he was in Chicago, he met a person, a very wealthy person, very well-to-do. In his old age, you know, like death is nearing. And he was talking and he was sharing his experiences with Maharaj. And Maharaj came to know that actually it's a coinage in the Western world, you know, life begins at 50. Just exactly opposite of what Vedic culture is. And I've seen, you know, when I travel with the groups, I've seen it's they're serious about it. They start planning to marry at the age of 45, 47, because they think this is the right age, you know, we have seen life, now we are mature enough to handle marriage. So for them, life begins at 50. And he was sharing with Maharaj that how, you know, that because he was rich, he was a rich person, what he did was, he was marrying each 2 years. And because in US the laws are such that if you divorce, you know, the wife has to be given some, I don't know what they call, some compensation, alimony, right? And so he would actually tell his accountant, you know, take care of so much, just like maybe remove $1 million or $2 million for this marriage. Because after 2 years, any case, I'm going to divorce her. And even the girls were like this because they knew what he's doing and they were also just coming for the money. So they were happy and he was happy. And then at the end of life, you're saying, but Maharaj, I really regret. I just wasted my life. At least that dawned upon him. You know, at least that dawned upon him. But this is what it is. Just try to enjoy as much as you can. And I think Shukadev Maharaj gives this example. Actually, they're all dead, but just like flapping birds, you know. If you see birds just before death, they start flapping really hard. Right? So even like man, when he's nearing old age, he starts really flapping. Just enjoy as much as you can before you encounter death. Right? And so they are not worried about any sinful activities. Because anyhow, there is no action and reaction. That is their concept. So, any case. But actually, now in case of Parikshit Maharaj, he had an advanced warning system. But the point is, it is there for everybody. In the form of old age, at least. If you don't learn by your experience, it is old age, jara. Right? But still, people neglect this warning signal. Death is like red. You know, when you see on the traffic light, it's like red. But before red, you know, there is green. And just before green, before it turns into red, it's orange. So be ready, you know, like, it's going to be a red signal. So, same is the case with jara. It's like an orange signal. It's like, slow down now. Death is nearing. Be careful. Be ready. Everybody has that warning signal. And in the conversation, in the story of Puranjan, this is very nicely highlighted in the form of Kal Kanya. Yeah? She, no one wants to accept Kal Kanya, who's compared to nothing but jara. The afflictions of old age. No one wants to want that. This is what the gerontologists are actually trying to do. Trying to conquer the afflictions of old age. These afflictions for a devotee are nothing but an impetus to move forward in spiritual life. Knowing that, well, now it's time. I should leave all my attachments and take seriously to spiritual life. But contrary to this, the scientists want to do away with these afflictions. Even if they don't want to do away, even if they accept, well, death is an inevitable part of time, still they want to conquer the afflictions of old age. They want to conquer jara. And for anyone who has read the Bhagavad Gita, this is a recurring thing everywhere. Janma mrityu jara vyadhi dukkha dosha anudarshana. This material world is made of these four things. You cannot conquer them in any way. Right? Such attachment. You know, just like there was an old man and he went to the barber. And the barber looked at him and was just frustrated because he could see there's hardly any hair on his head. So he said, kya karna hai? Kaatu ki ginu? Bola, nahi, nahi, nahi. Isko rang do. Just color it. So that is the attachment. You know, people just don't want to accept that they're getting old. Right? They just want to hang on to it. And that is how the gerontologists come into picture. And that's why Prabhupada was so heavy on these so-called material scientists. They're trying to defy the very purpose of human life. Yeah. And then, of course, many things, but just 3 minutes. So, some points from Prabhupada's purport and some really enlivening points. He says, actually jara, is defined by these activities. Disease, non-hygienic conditions, and ultimately because she is wedded to Prajwar, who is the brother of Yavanraj, Prabhupada says, this Prajwar is nothing but the temperature of 107 degrees that comes just before death. He says, these are the afflictions of old age. And then he says, Narad was immune to the attack of jara or invalidity. And similarly, jara or the destructive force cannot attack any follower of Narad Muni or a pure Vaishnava because they would be able to smash the materialistic way of life. Right? They have conquered. Why they have conquered? Because they have arisen about the modes of nature. And this, Prabhupada writes, and this connects to the purport, you know, it says, because of the regulated sexual indulgence, unregulated sexual indulgence or illicit sex actually brings this afflictions of old age. For one who has led a regulated life, who has done austerity, he, though the old age comes, he is not afflicted by the power of old age. That is how he conquers old age. Yeah. That's why the point is being made of knowledge and austerity. And what is austerity? No meditating, no illicit sex, no gambling. Yeah. So when one is harassed by the invalidity of old age, various diseases manifest at the gates of his body. And Prabhupada gives amazing examples and amazing remedies that people use for that. I'm not going in great detail. But when a field is overgrown with thorns and weeds, it becomes very difficult for the owner to work with it. That is the position of the spirit soul when the body itself becomes a burden due to disease. Right? He's not able to enjoy because the field of his activity is nothing but filled with thorns and weeds in the form of these afflictions of old age. So we'll rush to what the solution is. So Prabhupada says in the Bhagavad Gita, of course Krishna is saying this, smacho mamchoya avibhacharyana bhakti yogena sevate sa guna samityatyetan brahma bhuyaya kalpate. So one who engages in full devotional service, unfailing in all circumstances, at once transcends the modes of material nature and thus comes to the level of Brahman. When one renounces this false attitude and renounces the puffed up position that he is also God, that is real renunciation. This is what actually Shiv Gurudev Goswami is saying. And why am I narrating you all this? Tad Vijnanam. And what is this Tad Vijnanam? To see the futility of this material existence. To bring this impetus of renunciation within you. And how that is possible? When one rises above these modes of nature. And the solution is actually given by Shukdev Goswami just at the end of Bhumi Gita. I think it's the 15th shloka or something. Where he says, yes, to uttama shloka munanuvada. The person who desires pure devotional service to Lord Krishna should hear the narrations of Lord Uttam Shloka's glorious qualities, the constant chanting of which destroys everything inauspicious. The devotee should engage in such listening in regular daily assemblies and should also continue his hearing throughout the day. And Vishwanath Chaitanya Thakur gives interesting things. And of course, this is definitely related to what we sing every day. You know, Nityam Bhagavat Sevya. So he says, Nityam, regulated cultivation of the topics of Krishna, and Abhikshanam, constant remembrance of such regulative spiritual experiences. And then he classifies this hearing into four types. First, hearing about the Lord's great devotees. Second, about Krishna's eternal associates, which he says is definitely better than his great devotees. Thirdly, Lord's activities, for they reveal his qualities. And fourthly, specifically the 10th canto for the Lord's pastimes. Because although found in other cantos, they are present everywhere in the 10th canto. That was the impetus for Prabhupada. You know, he really rushed through. Even before he finished the Bhagavatam, he was doubtful. Probably I may or may not able to. So he just made sure that actually gives the summary of the 10th canto in the form of Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, of course, every day we sing this, Nashti Prayeshu Abhadreshu Nityam Bhagavasevaya Bhagavati Uttama Shloke Bhaktir Bhavati Neshtaki. And the immediate shloka after this defines Titam Satve Prasiddhiti. So how does one come to this platform of Neshtiki is basically situated in the mode of goodness. He rises and gradually he even crosses the mode of goodness. And once he does that, once he is situated in a Shuddha Sattva, then we sing the next shloka. Krishnaya Vasudevaya Devaki Nandanaya Cha Nanda Gop Kumaraya Govindaya Namo Namaha. So Naishtiki is basically indicating to coming closer to Shuddha Sattva. And when we start with Krishnaya Vasudevaya, so Vasudevaya basically indicates Shuddha Sattva, Vasudev, the Vasudev platform. And because for the impersonalist, it is an implication of Brahma Jyoti. That's why Queen Kunti is being very implicit and saying, yes, Vasudevaya. Which Vasudevaya? Krishnaya. Right? And just to highlight that point again and again, she says, well, Devaki Nandanaya cha. There may be many Krishnas who are the sons of Devaki. So again he qualifies Nanda Gopa Kumaraya. Just to highlight again and again, this Krishna. He, the personality of Krishna, the son of Vasudev Krishna. So one wants by regularly hearing the pastimes of Krishna, just by hearing constantly in the assemblies and throughout the day. Yeah, making that endeavor of reading Srila Prabhupada's book, hearing the lectures of Srila Prabhupada. We are situated on this Brahma Bhuvaya Kalpate, on this platform which is beyond the mode of material existence. Yeah, which is beyond these three modes. That's why she is qualifying Krishnaya Vasudevaya Devaki Nandanaya cha. And in fact, she Amazing, you know, because she actually qualifies this in so many different ways, and Prabhupada gives amazing purport to this. And once you read it, actually, you know, it just seems like a normal thing in the teachings of Queen Kunti, that Prabhupada is actually preaching to the general mass. But when you read it, you know, in bits, just taking each para for what it is, Prabhupada makes such amazing insights into this whole verse. It says, Krishnaya Vasudevaya, and he's saying that once a devotee comes to the Shuddha Sattva platform, he can immediately make a relationship with Krishna. And then all these words implying Krishna are nothing but a progression of these relationships. So Vasudevaya, you know, Devaki Nandanaya cha, parental affection. Right? And also in this, by using these words, Queen Kunti is again highlighting the very point that Vishwanatha Chakri Thakur has made here. You know, even in hearing about the pastimes of hearing about Krishna, he has made these gradations. What is really more beneficial? Yes, hearing about great devotees, but more about the eternal associates of Krishna. Exactly what she's been saying here. Krishnaya Vasudevaya, by qualifying the words, by describing Krishna as Vasudevaya, Devaki Nandanaya cha, Nanda Gop Kumaraya, Govindaya, she's again saying, you know, she's indicating to the eternal associates of Lord Krishna, please go and hear about them. Right? Please go and hear about them. At the same time, she's making this point of how one can strike a relationship with Krishna. Yes, Vasudeva and Devaki had a parental affection, but greater than that was the parental affection of Nanda Maharaj, Nanda Gopa Kumaraya. Yeah. Why? Because he was able to relish the Kumar pastimes of the Lord. Nanda Gopa Kumaraya. Right? He was able to relish the Kumar pastimes of the Lord, which are more, which in fact was not available to Devaki and Vasudev. Yeah. And then, Govindaya Namo Namo. Of course, Govindaya can be taken in number of ways here. But basically, it's the one who has conquered senses, and it's implying to Gopijan Vallabh in one sense. To one who has conquered the senses of the gopis and also of the sakhas. That is how Govinda has been, and also of the cows. Right? So, in this way, the implication is there. So, in this way, Prabhupada actually, in the whole purport, and I'm not going into great detail, I think we are already overboard, is trying to say that how one can rise above this modes of material nature. It's already 9:22, so I think we should end. So, but that's the whole thing. In summary, that's what Bhumidevi is trying to tell here. How one can be in any yoga, but being situated transcendentally by the service at the lotus feet of Krishna, by hearing and chanting. Yeah, Mukta Sangasya Param Vraje. This Mukta Sangasya is what? Is exactly what Bhumidevi is trying to say here. Mukta Sangasya is to be free from material attachment. That is what she is trying to again and again highlight here. Mukta Sangasya Param Vraje. And how that is done? Simply by chanting Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Thank you for your patient hearing. Srimad Bhagavat Mahapuran ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.